Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. All My Wallach's fascinating documentary film, Taking Venice, puts us back in the Cold War era when the United States government was determined to fight communism with culture. The backdrop for all of this is the Venice Biennale, which was at that time considered to be the most influential art exhibition in the world. And the story unfolds like a Bond movie, but with artists involved, and how the U.S. tries to maneuver their own into the position to be named what is essentially the best or finest artist in the world is a, as I said, fascinating story. One that I'm sure that you will be talking about long after you've seen the film. Again, the film is called Taking Venice, and we're joined today by the director, Amai Wallach. Amai, welcome to Film School Radio.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Thank you. And there is so much to recommend to our listeners regarding this film and this story. I mean, even if you don't know what the Venice Biennale is, you will be fascinated with all the machinations and politics that went along with it, and to see how important this was to these different countries and to the people involved in it. Let's talk a little bit about how you got involved in this particular story. What drew you to wanting to do the documentary film Taking Venice?
I was an art critic most of my life. And in that world, this story kind of was, it was an urban legend. You know, this was this scandalous Biennale. The Biennale is the, or was for many, many years, there are now many of them, but it was the great art exhibit in the world. And it was like called the Olympics of art. And it's where all the nations competed with each other. And so I'd heard about the 1964 Venice Biennale. I thought it was always an interesting idea. And as an art critic, I was so intent on writing about art as part of the world. It's part of every aspect of our lives. It intersects with our lives intersect with it. And I was trying to tell those kinds of stories. I just made a film about an artist named Ilya Kabakov, who was born in the Ukraine in 1933 when Stalin was starving the Ukraine. Nothing changes, does it? Grew up in the Soviet Union. I met him in 1987. He'd never been allowed to exhibit there. And then 1988, he came to the West and became the great artist of the Soviet period. And finally went back to Russia to show all over Moscow, including the Pushkin Museum. And I'd made a film about that from that side of the Iron Curtain, because he really showed in his art the psychological daily life of what it was to be in the Soviet Union. And I was talking to a producer about distributing it. And I said, do you have any ideas for a film? And she said, well, I was at the Venice Biennale in 1964. And it all fell into place. It's just exactly what I wanted. It is about every aspect of life. It is art. It's a great story.
It is a great story. And you throw in the Camelot or the Kennedy administration and his dynamic appeal around the world. And at that time, it really was, in many ways, the height of the Cold War. We had just gone through the Cuban Missile Crisis, which was a significant event during that period of time. It could have led to the end of the world as we know it. So there was a lot going on here. And I understand this sort of very competitive impulse these countries had to be seen as the best. What was it about this particular story of what the United States was trying to engineer, if you will, at this event that was your first entry point? Who was your entry point into this story that we see in the film?
Well, the entry point was actually an image. There was this wonderful photographer named Ugo Mulas, who was taking a lot of photographs at that time and was at that Venice Biennale. And he took these photographs that went around the world of Robert Rauschenberg's paintings being loaded onto boats so they would be eligible for the prize. And I thought, man, that is a film. And we ended up recreating that boat. I called it the boat heist in color from those photographs. that was my entry point. And my other entry point was Robert Rauschenberg, who I knew as an artist later in his life, and who was a man of such moral integrity and such belief in art, and also such an innovator in everything he had done, and so influential to this day that he seemed a very good subject.
I was thinking of Alice Denny, who seemed to provide within the film an awful lot of context for the story.
Well, I had no idea. I mean, I read that she had been the vice commissioner.
Yeah.
I realized that she was still alive, and I rushed down to Washington to interview her. In those days, you know, I didn't have a budget, so you could hire a crew and do an interview for $1,500, you know. So I rushed down to Washington to interview her, but I had no idea what a character she is. Yeah. She was fabulous. She was 96 years old, and she arrived in a red dress and big sunglasses, and she was just over the top. Every tale she told was wonderful. So yes, you're totally right. That was a great starting point for this film.
Yeah, and just to put her in context, she was working with another very important person in this film, which we'll get to, Alan Solomon. But Alice played a pivotal part in the story. Tell us a little bit about her position in all of this.
She was a big Washington personality. She had helped start the museum. I'm forgetting, but she had helped start the first modern museum in Washington. She had helped start the first modern gallery in Washington. And then she herself started something called the Jefferson Gallery. She brought contemporary art to Washington. She was so instrumental in that. And she knew everybody. I mean, as she said, I knew the Kennedys from way back. Yeah. She had a friend at the United States Information Agency who asked her advice on who to find to be the commissioner. And it's when she found the commissioner, Alan Solomon, who was this trailblazing director of the Jewish Museum in New York. He'd turned this very quite religious museum that did a few contemporary shows into this red hot center of contemporary art. And she pointed the USIA, the United States Information Agency, towards him as the commissioner. And then he asked her to be the vice commissioner of that Venice Biennale.
In the film, that's where we're introduced to the work of Robert Rauschenberg. And what a fascinating artist, what a fascinating man, and the connections that he has, not only during that period of time in the art world, but as we move forward in the more increasingly closer to our time frame, the modern art world, and what a seminal figure he was in that.
He was, and as I made the film, I came to understand the depth of his humanity in a way I had never understood it. I mean, in many ways, he was a model artist who totally believed in art, who totally believed in what art could do. Towards the end of the film, someone says, "Do you really believe that art can change society?" And he said, "Of course it can. It has for thousands of years. I don't know why one more day would make a difference."
Yeah, and his work was, it was interesting, and we get into it in this film, and that is Taking Venice, by the way, is the name of the film, and it is where we see his trajectory as an artist, as someone who was thought of as anti-art. His work was considered that, and he himself was considered kind of a, I don't know if bad boy of the art world, but certainly someone on the outside looking in. Would that be fair?
Right. This is right. What was, you know, the first great American movement of contemporary art was the abstract expressionists, who, you know, they looked inside themselves to express in abstraction feelings and ideas. Well, he did the opposite. His art was about the real world, the world outside. One of the most important things he ever did was, he was in his 20s and he just painted these panels of white, just white canvases. And the whole point was, whatever happened on those white panels, somebody walks by and there's a shadow, something falls on it, there's a dust mote. Anything that the light changes, anything that happens in the real world is actually the subject of those paintings. And as he developed, he just brought the real world in more and more. Anything he found on the street, if he found a garbage can, if he found a stuffed goat, if he found whatever, it would go on to his canvas or become a sculpture, his own ties, an old quilt, whatever was in the real world. And his point was, he wanted people to see the real world with new eyes, not to say, oh, it has to be aesthetic, but no, you live in a world that's really interesting. Open your eyes.
We're speaking with the director, Amai Wallach. The film is called Taking Venice. And in addition to the personalities that we've been discussing, there is the backstory, the sort of the Cold War part of this, and also the internal politics of the art world, the Venice Biennale, and all of those things that come together in this film. And the internal politics of the art world are a world unto themselves. And that's a really fascinating part of the film for me.
And, you know, the jockeying for position, the trying to win is Leo Castelli, who was kind of the dealer who, in a way, invented the modern art market, for better or worse. He says, well, this competition for prizes, it's like a political campaign. You do whatever it takes to win. It's no different. And that was the kind of thing that was going on. They were doing whatever it took to win, as in fact, probably all the other countries were too. But we were more blatant about it, and we were more attacked for it.
In the film, it's discussed in a way that we didn't really ever put that kind of an effort into promoting our artists in a way, in the ways that a lot of other places were. And I think at that time, as John Kennedy himself acknowledges, France, the art capital of the world, at a showing of Mona Lisa. And I think that was probably appropriate, right? That France would have been seen as that.
Well, it's actually hilarious because, you know, the Mona Lisa was painted by an Italian. I love that scene because the Mona Lisa was painted by an Italian. But Kennedy very rightly said that France was the capital of the art world because you looked at the artists who had won the top prize at the Biennale for the past 10 years. Most of them were French. And the capital of art was considered Paris.
The film, again, is taking Venice, and there are a lot of elements here. We get to meet some very, very interesting people along the way. The journalist Calvin Tompkins is a wonderful guide through this. Ed McBride, the cultural diplomat. I've never heard of such a designation. There's just so many others. And also Jasper Johns, who in his own right was an accomplished artist in the work that he did, and a friend of Robert Rauschenberg as well. So there's a lot of a mixture of a lot of different elements within the film. What kind of reaction so far has the film screened so that you're getting reaction from people about the people in the film or just about the story itself? What's been the reaction to it?
Well, you know, our festival premiere was last November in Rome at the Rome International Film Festival, and it was great. That was a wonderful reception. However, we had our theatrical opening this Friday at the IFC Center in New York, and we did so well. We had full houses that they're holding us over for a second week. We're going to be 1 week and we're going to be 2 weeks. And next weekend, we're showing at the Hammer Museum in LA, and then we're having a run at two theaters in LA. The two Lemley theaters. One is the Royal, and you probably know the name of the other one.
Yes, I do. The other one will be the Lemley Town Center. That's on the 24th. And then on June 7th, it'll be opening up at the Lemley Glendale. So a lot of opportunities to see Taking Venice. And that is great to hear that you're getting that kind of reception in New York. And if documentaries struggle in a theatrical release, and so good to hear that the reception for Taking Venice has been so strong.
It's not a good moment for independent documentaries, let me tell you, but I have wonderful distributors, Zeitgeist, and they're getting it all over the country. Thank you. You know, it's wonderful, you know.
Well, that's wonderful. But it is truly, truly terrific news to hear that it's resonating with people. It's just, there's a lot of really interesting elements to the film. And in a way, this conspiracy theory about surrounding the story of this, I don't know if I want to say anything more than that, but it plays off of that idea, the film does. What would you say about?
Well, I wanted to cut it like a caper.
Yeah.
I like films about art that are genres, like the Mizell brothers used to make films about Christo and Jean-Claude. And, you know, the one in France was rom-com, and the one in Ring-Fence was a Western. And I think it's a really nice way to organize a film. Yeah. It's fun to watch, and you can tell a story without being too sonorous about it.
Yeah.
And that's really what I wanted to do. And there are a lot of elements to the story, but we're telling us through story that carries you through, I hope.
Well, my Wallach, so how long have you been an art critic?
Well, so I was an art critic for many decades, and I released my first film, which I made with a filmmaker, Marion Cajori. It was called Louise Bourgeois, The Spider, The Mistress, and The Tangerine. That was released in 2008, and this is my third film.
Okay.
So I'm a latecomer filmmaker.
I want to thank you so much for your time. I want to thank you for the film Taking Venice. And again, it'll be opening here in Los Angeles on the 24th. And it'll be at the Royal Theater in Los Angeles, as well as the Town Center in Encino. Go ahead, please. Go ahead.
So I'm going to do a Q&A at the Royal on Friday night.
Okay. On the 24th, Friday night, you'll be at the Royal for a Q&A. That's fantastic. Great. Well, thank you, Amai Wallach, for your work in this wonderful documentary film called Taking Venice. And thank you.
Thank you. It was fun.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.